Jay got into the business in 1976, a life member of the Million Dollar Roundtable, but not just a lifetime member at the highest level, which is called top of the table. Mm-hmm. And to achieve the top of the table is not a simple feat. To be there and then to also be a lifetime member is pretty great. How did you get started in the business?
Interesting question. Let me just step back a little bit in time. My father was one of the biggest electrical contractors in Philadelphia. And him and his partners said, don't go to Temple full time, get in the electrical business. So I became an apprentice electrician at Local 98 and continued to school every night and every weekend until I got my degree from Temple. And after 5.5 years, I hated the business and I left. So it wasn't for me. I didn't trust my dad's partners. I trusted my dad, who was my best friend, but I didn't trust his partners. So I left the business, got into the garment industry for a year and a half or 2 years, did very well. I worked for a company called Seymour Fashions, which is no longer a business, but they bought and sold piece goods, private goods from like Calvin Klein. They made 2,000 extra dozen shirts. So they would have people around the country sell to the department stores, and they asked me to take over the in-house sales, which was about $1,000 a week in sales. And I said, how do I do this? They said, here's the Yellow Pages. And I went in and called stores, and within 3 months, I had it up to $25,000 a week. So I knew I could sell. And then a friend of mine, whose sister-in-law I was dating, convinced me to come into the life insurance business, which I did with Equitable Life. And that was pre-contract training in December of 76. And here I am all these years later going, okay, look what we've done.
What were some of the biggest challenges that you faced at the very beginning?
Getting past the word no. And I realized my manager at the time was Roland Houseman, who was fabulous. And he told me that I would never succeed. And I said, why'd you hire me? He says, well, I had a goal and a quota. I had to hire you. And Jeff said to hire you. And I said, fine. I said, well, why won't I succeed? And he said, because you're not married. You don't have any kids. You don't have a mortgage. And he gave me a whole list of things. What he didn't know, that my entire life, I was always told, you can't do this because my motivation was always to prove people wrong. So I said to Roland, I said, you're the number one sales manager in Equitable Life. Tell me what to do and I'll do it. If I succeed, you can take all the credit. If I fail, you will get all the credit. He said to me, well, see no less than four new people a week, do 200 for the year, keep records of that. And if you do that, you'll get at least one sale every week in the next 3 months. So I did what he told me, and that's how I started.
Sometimes we'll go to someone that we consider a mentor and we'll ask them, what should I do? And they lay it out for us and we create our own way of doing it and don't listen to that person. So I'm interested to hear what your thought process is on listening to the advice that someone who's at a higher level that you really respect, should you take that to heart and do that 100%?
People didn't become successful by ignoring other people's great ideas. I was told in this industry when I started that some of the most fabulous ideas that they've used came from other people. So in 1978, which was my first, 77, I started officially in June. 78 was my first full year when I qualified for the $1 million roundtable in my first year, but you weren't allowed to tell anybody. You were what's called a provisional applicant. And I went to the MDRT meeting at Radio City Music Hall in New York City. Blew me away. And I got some great ideas. And I went back. There was a fellow, Steve Jacobs, who was a wonderful mentor to me. Ronnie Lorch was a mentor to me. And they just told me some great things. And I went, well, they're making a lot of money. They're successful. They're happy. Why don't I do what they're doing? So I did it. And it was pretty simple. A simple idea. If you want to make an estate sale, take the estate tax table, sit down with a client and say, here's the estate tax table. Excuse me. Where is your estate fall? And they'll point to a number. I said, go to the right. See the tax? You want it to go to your children and grandchildren, or do you want it to go to the government? And they go, of course I wanted to go to my children and great and grandchildren. Here's your sale. So this simple idea turned into a lot of money in people's estates because we protected the estates.
In your experience in working with people, do they make it much more difficult than it has to be at times?
Sometimes, yes. Yeah. Sometimes the attorneys will make it much more complicated. But it still comes down to what is motivating that person to make a movement. You know, when it comes to life insurance, you only buy life insurance for two reasons. You love someone or you owe someone. That's it. So if you find out what motivates that prospect, all right, you can easily solve their problem. It's not always life insurance. But we've sold a lot of life insurance solving problems.
You have a whole system for goals. By setting those goals and keeping track over the years, that's really one of the key contributors to making you super successful. Is that the case?
Absolutely. Let's first identify goals. If anyone's paying attention, I hope you have a pencil in your hand. A goal must be conceivable. In the great book by Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, he wrote, "What the mind of man can conceive and believe he can achieve." And that book was written a long time ago. Your goal has to be conceivable. Many of us get our goals through what's called dreams. We wake up in the morning and have what we go, this is what I think I want. The difference between a dream that you want to make a goal and just a dream that's a neat thing to think about is the things we want the most, we dream in vivid color. The things that are passing thoughts go by in black and white. So if you identify your goal, it's conceivable. It has to be believable. You must be achievable, measurable, and more importantly, accountable. Because if you're not accountable to somebody, and I have to be accountable to my chief of staff, my wife, as well as my staff in my office, if it's not accountable, it doesn't count because you can make up excuses. So when do we set our goals? December the 11th, every year, I sit down. It's my mother's birthday. And I go, what do I think I want? And I can have 10 or 15 things that I'll write down. And then I go, what do I really want? And then I'll narrow it down to the top five or six. And then I write that in my goal book. And I have a book. I don't have it with me. But I have this beautiful book. It's a satin book that a former employee gave to me back in 1990. This is my second book. I had one from day one. But it has a rainbow on the front. And every year I write down my goals on the right-hand page. And as I achieve those goals, they go on the back of the page called my victories. As an example, I had set a goal to sell my house by June of last year in Bucks County. The house was closed on June 30th. It was in my goal book, so we achieved it. But writing down that goal could be as simple as, gee, I want to make $100,000 this year. Let's make up a number. Write it down. That's the elephant. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So if I know that I need an opening interview, 10 of them, and new in your career, maybe you'll get two closing interviews out of the 10 to get one sale. And if that one sale averages $1,000, I need 100 sales. When I started, I had on the front of my appointment book a graph. And I kept track every month of my sales for the first 10 years of my career on that to see what were my good months and bad months. So if I know I need $1,000 in a case, I got to say, okay, I have to see so many people to get so many interviews, to get so many closing interviews, to present my ideas, to get so many closings. When I started my career, it was 200 interviews a year. Wow. Number. 4 weeks, not so bad. That's what it came down to.
Very small bites, like you were saying. If you're going to eat the elephant, you just do the in bite size. So you had to get in front of four people. You're brand new in the business. How do you do that? Because there's a lot of people that are fairly new And one of the things they're always saying is so hard to get in front of a prospect. How do I do it? How do I get in front of people? How do I get the business? How do I close? What is your advice for them?
Well, one way to start is create three lists. The first list is people that you can call, say, hey, it's Jay. How are you? And they don't say Jay who. Right. That could be your family. That could be your friends. The next list, which is going to be at least twice as long. Hi, it's Jay Weintraub. How are you? The next list is, hi, it's Jay Weintraub. You know me or I know you through somebody. So that's going to be your biggest list. Start with the people you know and say, I have no reason to believe that you're in need of my financial planning expertise or insurances or whatever. But do you have a moment that we could spend together just so I can tell you about what I do and how I do it? No one's going to say no. Somebody may say, well, you're all finished. You know what? I'm okay. I've been dealing with a guy for years. And I can say, you know what? I would have expected you to say that. Who do you know that I can talk to? If your best friend walked in the door right now, would you introduce me or would you let me sit here like a lug? And of course, she would introduce you. Please introduce me to that person. And that's how you start.
Yes. Did you ever get to a point where you were running out of people?
If I ran out of people, it's because I stopped prospecting. Right. Okay. You can't stop. Remember the goal. Make your plan. Pursue that plan and keep records.
So you have 4 a week. You had your goal. So how did you work that? How did you do it?
Well, I knew the industry said make your phone calls on Monday night to ask for appointments that week. All right. And I said, is that what everybody else does? And Roland said, yes. And Roland the houseman, I went, I'm not going to do that because they're going to say, oh, I'm busy Tuesday. I'm busy Wednesday. I'm busy Thursday. He says, when are you going to make your calls? I'm going to make them Thursday night. So every Thursday night, whether I was in the office or at home, I picked up, we didn't have cell phones back then. I picked up the phone and I made phone calls until I had 4 appointments set. At least. I didn't stop. Because if you stop, you lose.
You would really need to have a mindset that was pretty solid to keep you consistent in making the phone calls. How did you keep yourself with the proper mindset to be able to stay consistent and persistent?
That's a great question. Let me take you back to my baseball days. Okay, many people don't know that, but I was fortunate that I played minor league ball for the Cincinnati Reds. But if I go back to when I was 7 years old, I tried out for a baseball team, Little League, and back then not everybody made the team, and I tried out for the Pirates because Mr. Porries, I was friends with his son Richie, was a former minor league player from Mississippi. And I went out, he says, go to the center field. I said, where's center field? He sent me out to center field. And he hit a ball, and the ball was a grounder, and it hit a stone and hit me in the chin. I came up crying, and I got cut. I did not make the team. So I said to God, I will never get cut from baseball again. And so for the next year, I went behind my house with a tennis ball, or back then we had pimple balls, and I threw 100 balls a day at the garage until I never missed the ball. After that, my baseball career took off. Now, along the way, I had people say, you're not going to make it in baseball because you're too skinny and you're Jewish and skinny Jewish kids can't play baseball. And I ended up becoming one of the premier players in Philadelphia on an elite travel team. I played American Legion. I did not play high school ball because I didn't like the coach and I didn't need him to further my career. Played a little bit of Temple, got an invite to the Cincinnati Reds, and I spent 6 weeks in the minors. Until I blew out my knee and my career was over. I never let someone else's perception of me become my reality.
How many times do we listen to other people? They tell us their opinion, and for whatever reason, we'll believe it to be the truth. And then if it's a negative opinion, it can stop us from moving forward and we can give up. So it sounds like, again, your mindset was solid. In fact, it actually seemed to work the opposite for you. If someone said you couldn't do it, it was a motivator to actually push you to go even harder to get what you wanted.
Well, remember what I said at the very beginning, Roland Houseman, except I won't succeed because I'm young, not married, and I have no bills.
Exactly.
My greatest motivator is tell me what I can't do, and I'll show you what I can do.
How important is it for someone to be doing what they love?
There's nothing more exciting than waking up in the morning with a passion for what you do. When I get up in the morning, there's two things I always think of. One is be humble. Never forget where you came from. I told you earlier that I grew up in a row house in Second and Chelmsford, and my parents did not come from wealth. And my father used to tell the story that at one point we were so poor, we brought the trash in. And so anything we wanted, we had to have. When I wanted a pair of jeans and we were able to wear them to school, I worked at a place called Martin's Aquarium. It was my cousin's place. And I had to earn the money at $1 an hour to buy a pair of jeans. So I wake up humble every day. I never forget where I came from. I'm not so special. I'm just doing a great job to make a difference in people's lives. So I wake up with that passion to make a difference. And I wake up scared. Where every day, am I doing enough for my family? Am I doing enough for my community? Am I doing enough for my friends and my clients? And that's the scared part. You know, now it's really not a scare, but am I doing enough? So humble and scared is my mantra, and I should to do better every day.
If someone came to you who maybe wouldn't be of help, it wasn't a client, but they wanted help from you, how would you treat that person?
Everybody has to be treated. We talked a little bit about the golden rule, and the golden rule is treat others the way you would want to be treated. Now we got to go to the platinum rule, and that is treat others the way that we believe they want to be treated or that how they do want to be treated. So everybody, whether you're a client who comes to me, and here's a great example. I go to a place called Bob's Fish Market on Tilton Road. Family owned business. And I've gotten to know the guys pretty well. And one of the guys there is a young man and he's got tattoos. He's inked up and says to me one day, Jay, what do you do? And I tell him, he says, man, you drive a nice car, but you always come in here. Look at you. You have no idea whether you had $1 billion or $2. And he said, can you help me? And we're starting him on a program, just saving like $25 to $50 a month to get them started. So to me, making a difference in someone's life has nothing to do with where they are. It's what's making us feel good and making a difference. So somebody goes, see that white trout? He took care of me when I didn't have a nickel. Now look at me. And that's what makes me go.
When we do good things for other people, when we're kind and we do the right thing, it comes back. It may not come back from that individual person, but it does come back. And I don't know if you mind sharing the story that you then emailed me later about what happened after our call, because I just thought that was perfect.
We were on a phone call and we were talking about how I prospect for business and do I let people know about what I do? And I don't. I don't want to toot my own horn. I'm involved in many community activities and I do it out of my heart because I enjoy that. And how do we get business? Some people want to toot their horn all over the place. And maybe that drives a little business to you. But the best way for me to get business and the only way we get business is referrals. If you're referred by your cousin, your brother, great story, quick story. And that was, as we were having our conversation, I got two referral phone calls. Messages as we were on the phone. And I was like, wow, the universe is pretty cool. It does work.
So we're talking, Jay commits to me and says, yeah, I want to do this because I want to, any way I can be of help to other people, you know, I'd love to do that. And then literally 5 minutes, not even, it was like 2 minutes after we hung up, you sent me a message and you said, can you believe it? But here we go. And that is proof that if we do the right thing, and we treat people the right way, things come back to us. What belief or beliefs did you have to become a success in the business?
You have to believe in yourself. It's so important. What's equally important is find somebody who you admire and befriend them. I had Steve Jacobs at Corporate. I said to Steve, can you help me? What do you need? Can I walk into your office occasionally just to pick your brain and if I need help on a case, whatever the case may be? And Steve said, yeah. And he was a great mentor to me. I also had a couple of people that were new in the business around the same time I was that are still in the business. And we still talk to each other and pick our brains. And occasionally we all need to be picked up. Something happens. It just has you. Oh, and you know what? None of us are perfect. We all need a little pickup. Wherever you can get it, you got to get it.
Yeah. I love that. Jay. Yeah, anyone in the business, at any level of the business, like two or three things that they really need to know and practice.
First is, I had the opportunity in 1977 or 78 to meet Mr. Victor Hansen. And he came to Carp Arth and spoke. I think George Carp paid him $300 to speak. And some of you may know who he is. Some of you may have read Chicken Soup for the Soul. In other books, that's Mark Victor Hansen. And Mark and I said to Mark, can I be your friend? And Mark said, sure. So I would call Mark 2, 3, 4 times a year just to talk and to get ideas. And Mark told me one thing. There's three little letters you have to put together every single day. A-S-K. And if you ask people for help, if you ask people, can I have a meeting? If you ask people to move forward the next step in your process, if you ask people to say, can we move forward? If you ask, you're going to get yeses. And when you get your no's, thank that person for saying no, because you're that much closer to your yes. So never let the no's stop you. Use them to propel you to your yeses. And that's important.
So there's people watching and they have mentors all around them. And some of them, again, may be thinking, does he have time for me? But if someone comes to you and they say, Jay, I really want to learn about the business. I want to grow. I've seen you've been really successful. Can you help me out? What goes through your mind when someone says that to you? And they're sincere.
I am so flattered that someone would think that highly of me. And I have 4 or 5 younger people around the country that I mentor. I also run, unfortunately, this year we put it in deal. We have one in February, but not since. I run study groups. And I'll have 6 or 7 advisors from around the country fly in to come to my office because they think I'm special. I'm not special. I'm not. But I'm always willing to share ideas and listen. And more importantly, get ideas from them because that makes me better. So mentoring people is a joy. When I give someone an idea or they call me and say, Jay, I have a situation. How do you think I might handle it? And then they call me back and go, it worked. It worked. That's the best. That's the greatest. So it's not the withdrawals that we take from the bank of life. It's the deposits.
You're doing a fundraiser. I was wondering if you could talk about that because perhaps maybe someone might want to help you with that. We're getting close to the end here, but I wanted to touch on another thing that you feel is really important. How did you get the passion and how do you maintain the passion along the way?
I'm going to give the credit to my dad. My dad told me he came from nothing and him and his partners became one of the biggest electrical contractors in Philadelphia at one point. And he loved what he did. And he would go to work at 6 o'clock every day. He would walk in that back door to the house. And then he would have dinner with the family. And then he would work. He would take up blueprints and work. And he said, Jay, always be hardworking, be honest, be loyal, be trustworthy. And if you love what you do, do it with all your heart. So I learned from my dad, you know, those wonderful traits in a person. And fortunately, he gave them to me, maybe genetically or just through osmosis. And I wake up with a passion every day that I want to do more. Now, listen, guys, January the 1st, I'm going to be 69 and I still work at a crazy pace, but I take my family time. I take my vacation time. I do those things. But whatever I do, I love my family with a passion. I love my friends with a passion. When I play golf, you know, I do with a passion. And if you bring that passion to your practice, people will get it. They'll get the sense that you love it, and they will bring people to your practice. You got to be Jay. This guy really cares. And there's an old saying, people don't want to know how much you know. They want to know how much you care. And once you show them how much you care and they get it, then you can show them how much you know.
I love that. What percentage of your business is investment-based versus life insurance?
Interesting question. Right now, we have a nice book of business with investments. And I would say this year, we're probably 60% is from advisory fees, and probably 35% is from insurance sales, and the rest are old trails.
Got it. You've been to all these million-dollar roundtable meetings and some of the meetings with the top of the table, like the elite of the elite. What were some of the things that made them so special?
Everyone has to have a plan. If you talk to the 10 top advisors in any meeting, they all have a different way of doing business. You have to find out what makes you happy and how you want to do business. We at a meeting that I recently ran, there were 22 advisors in the meeting, and a young fellow in the meeting, about 35, an accountant who got into the financial business, said, Jay, unless somebody has $1 million, we are not going to take them as a client. And this was April. And I said, that's great. How many new clients did you bring in so far this year? And he says, none. And I said, why? Well, nobody had over $1 million. I said, do you eat every day? And he kind of looked at me and he said, well, what's your average account size? Our average account size is $141,000. Doesn't sound like much. But here's a great story, real quick. A young lady works for a salon that we have their simple plan. And she said, can I come in and see you one evening at 6 o'clock? She had $1,300 in her account. And can I bring my mom? Sure. She came in, my son Max was with me at the meeting, and we treated her like she had $10 million. And we explained in simple terms what she has and what's going on. And the mother afterwards says, maybe you can help me. And I said, well, we'd love to. We were flattered that you would think that way. Picked up a $3.8 million in assets from the mother. That's the Uncle Louie story. Everybody has an Uncle Louie. So don't look at somebody because they're tiny. Look at somebody because they have a problem or concern, and you solve that problem and you help them work their way through their concerns. And sure enough, Uncle Louie shows up.
I love it, Jay. I just want to say thank you. You know, there's been so many great nuggets here for everyone out there. I appreciate you being here, taking out of time out of your schedule. I just thank you from the bottom of my heart. Any last thing that you want to leave everyone with? That last statement?
Yes. You know why they keep scoring baseball?
What?
They want to know who wins. So we talked about goals, conceivable, believable, achievable, measurable, and accountable. All right. I keep detailed records on everything, opening interviews, closing interviews, sales, the amount of dollars, where they came from, right? You have to keep score. If not, you're just wasting your time. So the one thing, plan it, work your plan, never give up.
What's the best way for someone to track it? Just keeping it as simple as possible.
I created an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Okay. One last story. December 31st of 2018, I had a goal for X amount. I think at that time I wanted to have 80 interviews, opening interviews for the year. And it was December 31st, and I give my staff off so they could begin celebrating my birthday on New Year's Eve. But I go into the office just to make sure everything's all buttoned up and whatever I have to do. And I walked in on December of 18, pretty upset because I was one opening shy of 80. And I'm going, what do I do? Right? Who do I call? All the people I know, most of them are away. And so I'm sitting there working and I'm like sulking over one interview. My phone rang. Jay, this is so-and-so. Bill so-and-so referred me to you. You have a minute to talk to me right now? I got my 80th interview.
That's amazing. I love that. Jay, thank you again so much for all your time.
If anyone wants to pick my brain, there's not a lot to pick. Come to call me. I'll give you my number if that's okay.
In my book. That's 100% sure.
Yeah, I'll give you my cell because we're not working from the office. 215-760-2869. You're welcome to call. And if I can make a difference, it'll make us both feel good.
Does that not say it all here? Jay just gave out his cell phone to everyone here. So if you have a question or you need help with something, here is someone that's already where you want to be. He just opened up the floor to ask for some help.